Getting Past Being Joe Blow Neo Pro by Tobias S. Bakel, as read by Alex Wilson. Number 3. Original Source Creativity. Original what? It wasn't all that long ago that recording songs onto tape was the way I created a tailored soundtrack for myself. The crazy thing was that sometimes the copy I was dubbing from were already on tape, and some of those had been taken from another source entirely. The resulting drop in quality from doing that the first time wasn't too noticeable, but when a friend of mine tried to make a copy of my copy, we ended up with something entirely washed out and tinny, almost impossible to listen to. Those tapes serve as a handy metaphor when talking about apprentice stages of writing. Struck by various authors he admires, our Joe Blow Neo Pro often starts writing stories that are inspired by other genre stories he has read. Often those same stories are the ones that got him fired up to start writing. The community of science fiction and fantasy writers we read in do this often enough, and it isn't hard to see why Joe wants to emulate that. Problem is, being Joe Blow Neo Pro, he might not be ready to join that ongoing literary conversation. Too often what comes out instead is a very tinny-feeling sort of story. A copy of a copy of a copy. I'm sure editors see this a lot. When cyberpunk was at its zenith, how many Mirror Shades imitators were sending out yet another plugged-in, jaded-sounding, flashy story where people used Japanese-branded equipment and jacks in the back of their necks? Maybe some of those stories that came in weren't even that bad, but when stacked up against the 200 others that came in that month, the editors themselves probably became jaded rather quickly. It gets even worse with shows. Whatever's currently on TV seems to get co-opted as well. The problem is, the more familiar the genre readers and editors are with the work you are using for your inspiration, the more the work might feel unoriginal while Joe is trying to grow into his own. He needs a little bit more edge, something different that attracts attention from all the other good enough manuscripts. And there are a few ways to go about this. He can write what he knows, or he can become a good researcher, casting a net out beyond the regular images and ideas surrounding him. The first option pertains to the lucky few who have had an interesting life or are in a fascinating career. Writer Gregory Benford is an example of a working scientist who often writes hard science fiction, and it's not hard to see where he draws much of his inspiration and creativity from. Many of the field's writers have been scientists, and that route for story material in science fiction is long and honorable, to make an understatement. Others with other diverse backgrounds bring that voice to their work. Off the top of my head, I'd name Nalo Hopkinson as someone whose work is infused and inspired by her own background. But this is not the only route, and even for the writers mentioned above, many of their stories are influenced by things neither of them has experienced. I think realizing this is important. How many cyberpunk imitation stories would have been shaped into something completely different if, instead of reading only Gibson Sterling and the rest of that particular movement, Joe Blow Neo Pro had instead gone and picked up several issues of Wired for the technology information, National Geographic to research how other countries react to new technology, and spent some time reading about how the inner city ghettos really are? That is the reasoning behind the phrase original source creativity. Getting to the source, either through research or actual life experience, will make a fresher piece. Original source creativity, a detailed example. The story that strikes me as a good example to talk about is Robert Silverberg's The Secret Sharer. Throughout the story, you could almost smell salt in the air, even though the story featured hard vacuum, metallic rigging, and a young captain wired up into the hardware of the ship like some space opera cyberpunk. It read like a snatch of real, hornblower-esque ship handling. Having grown up on a boat myself, the story pulled at me. I thought Mr. Silverberg captured the feeling of being a captain well. The doubts of navigating, the responsibility, and the fear of screwing up a big, expensive piece of hardware. The story is about a starship's captain who takes on a stowaway who lives in the ship's data storage areas and must risk the ship to try and broadcast the stowaway off to safety. The particular volume this story was in had rather extensive comments on each story by the author. Reading Silverberg's notes on The Secret Sharer, one realizes that Silverberg was paying homage to an earlier piece of work. It is a short story called The Secret Sharer, oddly enough, by someone called Joseph Conrad. This was Silverberg's original source. Who the bloody hell Conrad was, I didn't know at the time I first encountered The Secret Sharer. I found out soon enough, though, by becoming an English major. Found out more about Conrad than I ever really wanted to know. The Secret Sharer was never featured in my official college lineup of texts, but out of curiosity I later found out a series of fascinating things about the story. The first was that, like me, Conrad was a sailor. He was writing out of life experience. He was an extraordinary sailor by all accounts, as he was well known for dangerous feats like brushing right by rocks. Amazingly, English was his second language, but he wrote stories in it well enough that not only is he featured and forced down many unwilling students' minds in the form of Heart of Darkness, but adaptations have been inspired from his work, like Apocalypse Now, and Robert Silverberg had been inspired to write a science fiction version of The Secret Sharer. Reading the story, I found Conrad was just as good, if not a little better, at evoking a response in me with the original Secret Sharer. In the Conrad version, a ship's captain takes a stowaway on. The stowaway is running from a violent misunderstanding that took place on another ship. Our captain releases the stowaway to swim for safety after sailing close to a reef and risking the ship. It's a great story about the nature of ships, coming of age, and learning confidence in one's abilities. I could see how a writer would want to write a response to that story, but using the tools and forms of another genre. But what was even more surprising is the proposal by some academics that Conrad himself drew his inspiration for that story from not only his experience as a sailor, but a particular historical incident about the famous tea clipper Cutty Sark. How deep can this go? The man who leapt into the water from his ship after losing his temper and killing someone in Conrad's story sounded very close to the death of one of Cutty Sark's first mates. This man had killed a black sailor. The furious crew petitioned local authorities in the next harbor they stopped at, hoping to have him hanged for his low regard of human life. A judge refused to execute the white first mate on the grounds that killing a black sailor wasn't enough of a reason to sentence him to death. The crew's reaction was malevolent enough that the first mate became scared enough of retribution to lock himself into his cabin and never come out. The crew prepared to sail on, while hoping to try again to have the first mate judged and hanged at the next port of call. Before the second attempt could occur, the first mate leapt out into shark-infested waters and died trying to make a swim for it. Not considering the fascinating lure of trying to figure out what exact role race and ethnicity might have played on ocean-going ships around the world at the time, I would imagine the image of a man in fear swimming shark-infested harbor waters for hope of life and rescue is what caught Conrad's attention. There isn't much worse you can throw a character into than shark-infested waters. And being an author, Conrad no doubt rearranged and modified that snippet of memory to suit his needs. I'm not sure if he left out the other facets of the story due to forgetfulness or purpose, and there are still whole academic careers waiting to be made on trying to figure out if Conrad was a racist, as Nigerian author Achebe claims, or just a man mired in the practices of his times. Thus, Conrad's source was his life of sailing and a particular incident he may have remembered about a first mate swimming for his life from a clipper. From that story, Silverberg created his own take. using original source creativity. So of what use is this to Joe Blow Neopro, squirming in his seat as I trot out literary darlings of his most ancient of nemeses, the English profs? The use is that I think going to the original source makes for better work, and it challenges the new writer to come up with alternate and unexpected twists on the original trope. The first thing to do is find a writer whose work you admire. Tolkien? Head out and start studying linguistics, pre-industrial societies, Celtic and Norse mythology, and you've got a somewhat decent jump. Paul Anderson still has an article on the web called Thud and Blunder, which makes many similar points about how to sharpen up fantasy fiction by looking at the reality of the settings implied by lack of technology. Joe had better read this before writing The Friendship of the Magical Earring. Does Joe like David Drake, David Fentich, and Elizabeth Moon? They're perfectly exciting tales of military endeavor, but instead of writing stories based on the information they provide, Joe might find an eager audience by figuring out how they did their research. David Fentich has admitted his first novel paid homage to the Hornblower series of naval square rigger adventures. Joe should at least get out and find himself a few of those books, and then maybe do some research on the time period to capture that flavor for himself. To truly innovate, though, Joe should take the next step. He wants to write a military science fiction novel, but instead of using the inspiration of some other genre writer, look for other novels like Hornblower, or find some period of military history that fascinates him more than colonial times. The complaint may be that this sort of research doesn't sound too sexy. It sounds so very structured and non-creative, yet the opposite is actually the case. The writer may not come up with a full-blown story on the spot, voila, but the seeds for something unique are sown. Ideas are inserted into the subconscious to stew, and they are ideas that aren't necessarily available to the hundreds of other beginners watching only cable and reading the current magazines. Original source creativity is mainly research, but also a recognition of where the imitative inspiration is really coming from, several layers removed. This involves reading outside the genre often and reading nonfiction, as well as getting a good grasp on some history. This ability to make himself different and fresh is a very powerful tool that Joe Blow Neopro should get accustomed to. Taking the step from imitation to innovation is important. There is nothing wrong with wanting to respond or emulate the writers that inspire us to do the same, but in order to successfully develop, Joe Blow Neopro must learn to come into the game with a feeling of freshness to get an edge on all the other competition. Or, if he doesn't, his most recent Firefly-inspired piece is just going to come back rejected. Not surprising, it may do him a little good to read the Pulitzer Prize-winning book Killer Angels by Jeff Shara to see where Joss Whedon got some of his original source material from. And then, from there, keep reading. Recording was produced by Telltale Weekly.